on the Pilot TV podcast this week, we're on the detective beat with Colin Farrell in Sugar on Apple TV+, taking a last voyage with the crew of Discovery in the fifth and final season of Star Trek Disco on Paramount+, ducking problems with Ramesh Ranganathan in Avoidance on BBC One, and standing at the crossroads between partisan violence and banging tunes in Stephen Knight's This Town, also on the Beeb. Plus, Benedict Wong and John Bradley drop by to chat about Three Body Problem, now streaming on Netflix. I'm James Dyer, and welcome to the Pilot TV Podcast, your essential guide to every show that matters, and a podcast that is furious. Furious specifically to report that Sky have cancelled The Lazarus Project. Recent TV BAFTA nominee, The Lazarus Project, to be precise. What the actual fuck, Sky? So that's it. That's it. I'm calling a reset. We're going back to the checkpoint, and we are starting the loop again from the 1st of July, 2023. On the plus side, it means we get to watch season two of The Lazarus Project again from the start in November. Wahey. On the downside, you also have to listen to me being snooty about Love Rat all over again. C'est la vie. But before we reset the clock, we do have a podcast to do. And to that end, I'm joined with two equally furious colleagues. It's Boyd Hilton and Kay Ribeiro. How are you feeling, guys? You upset?
I'm bummed out. It's such a shit bit of news that we got. I mean, if Joe didn't have the other projects, you know, coming out soon, then I'd feel even more devastated for him. But still.
He's got stuff going on, yes.
And I blame you, James, because...
Me?
You got me into The Lazarus Project,
Oh, I
right?
see.
And I binged it, and I loved it.
And it's fabulous.
Yeah, and now I'm furious.
And they've cancelled it, because apparently all TV streaming services and indeed broadcasters are on a mission to just ruin good shows. So that's great.
Yeah, it's disappointing. At least it made it to the second season. I mean, you know.
Oh, eternal optimist,
Boydie, Joe, Captain Glass Half Full here.
Well, Joe Barton himself is very funny about how, prior to that, most of his products did not make it to the second
true.
Season.
That
so
is true.
Giri
that
Haji,
is true. Giri Haji, fucked by the Beeb.
The one with the long
title. The bastard son and the devil himself, fucked by Netflix.
The bastard devil and the son, yeah.
Yes. The bastard devil son. And he was, remember how exhausted he was? Remember when we had him on the show and he like had to write those episodes?
He was a shell of a human when he came in.
He was a shell of a man. So, he's, you know.
But he
he's got other projects as
well. He does. Oh, yeah. He's got the Keira Knightley thing, which is like very, very near to us.
And he's got another one after that that's been announced as well.
Yes, I believe he does.
Yes.
He does.
Okay, so what we're saying is we're going to pack away our violins.
He's okay.
No, we're not. Like, it's like, okay, look, Joe is not out of work. He will do absolutely fine. However, think about the real victim here. And by that, I, of course, mean me. So, I love The Lazarus Project and I want to know what happens and I'm not going to. And that's upsetting.
Well, just ask Joe.
Should I do that?
Just say, Joe, listen, like, pull your finger out. When you've got a few 5 minutes, can you just send me an email just saying how you see the third season going?
Papa Essiedu was so good in that show, and I'm going to miss him. I'm going to miss him.
Nominated for a BAFTA.
Yeah. Hopefully he's going to win, just as a big old two fingers up to the people who cancelled
it. He probably won't win, but yeah.
Anywho, that was how we started on a bum note today. There must be better things to address, more upbeat things, I should say. Kay, what have you been watching this fair week?
This week, I've been watching... most of my time was taken up watching Alice and Jack, which we spoke about on Pilot Plus. So if anyone hasn't heard that, listen to our... Because we had a discussion, didn't we? We decided we'd done one day, spoiler special.
We did.
And why don't we now do Alice and Jack? So for that reason, I binged the last 5 episodes and it was brilliant. Won't go into that. It's not illegal. Boyd's pulling a face,
yeah,
I have to say.
We're basically cheating, saying you watched the rest of the episodes for a thing that you suggested we do on the...
I didn't say I didn't suggest it. I'm just saying the question that was posed to me was, what have you been watching?
I was particularly pleased that you suggested it for Pilot Plus, because
Thank you, James.
Did the spoiler therapy for one day, because frankly I needed to talk about it because I was in an emotional place, and after that I had decided, glutton for punishment that I am, that I was going to segue straight from one day into Alice and Jack, because you just can't have too much love trauma in your life, and you were like, you and didn't unprompted you just said, let's do this, and I was like, yes, because then I could watch it and then go straight into spoiler therapy.
Yeah,
and it was
what
cathartic.
We're calling on the couch, like, just
yes. Kay has now named this segment of Pilot Plus
on the couch, which is
where we talk through our feelings on something we've just seen. Yes,
so it has to be that kind of show, doesn't it?
Can't and just there aren't
be that like,
many.
Yeah, on the couch for I don't know.
Oh yeah, we're not getting on the couch for just any old show.
No. So to speak.
Yeah.
It's that very specific kind of normal people one day, Alice and Jack kind of, you know, love trauma show.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, Alice
like
and Jack.
One a year. Sorry, carry on.
Oh, all right, boy, they're lashing out. That's a good franchise name.
It's a great franchise name, don't get me wrong. So, Alice and Jack.
Yes, Alice and Jack. And then, right, I'm late to this party. Neither of you, I'm sure, will be watching it. Ginny and George on Netflix. My friend has been trying to convince me to watch it for ages. It's two seasons deep. James, I was going to say you definitely wouldn't like it, but actually it might be.
What is it?
It's Skews a Little Young. It's about a mother and daughter who move into a new town. The mother, who had her child when she was 15, is running away from her past and is constantly reinventing herself. And it's about how her daughter and son settle into a new community and stuff. But I really like it. I think it's quite addictive, very entertaining, quite emotional.
Was it American?
Yeah.
Who's in it?
People.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Do you want me to get the cast list up?
No, I'll do it.
Go on.
No, don't worry.
Do some number crunching, Boyd.
Yeah.
Give us the facts. You can be the Carol Vorderman in this situation. or Susie Dent. Yeah, so I've been watching that and I've just binged that whole first series. And this is how much I like it. You know I'm an early bird to go to bed.
Right. Yes.
Stayed up to actual 11 o'clock.
Actual 11 o'clock. So 7 hours past your bedtime. That's extraordinary.
Thank you very much for noting that. Yeah.
Brianne Howie, Antonia Gentry, Diesel La Torocca. I'm not
these
making
are amazing
these up.
Names.
I mean, Felix Mallard. Good old Felix. This is the cast of this curious comedy drama.
It's not curious, right? So it's two seasons, and I think they're making the third.
That would be traditionally what would follow the second, yes.
Well, you'd say that, but what about Lazarus Project, you dick?
In fact, though...
Touché!
Because I could be bothered to Google it, just found out that it's actually been commissioned for a third and fourth series.
Third and fourth?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, good
Big
stuff.
I had to react like that, because what listeners can't see is that the face he pulled at me when he said it was so supercilious. I had to retaliate. Anyway... so that's what I've been watching. Binging Alice and Jack for a bit of trauma watching, and then cleansing my palate with Ginny and Georgia.
Well, a bit like you, actually, funnily enough, in terms of you had to watch the rest of the episodes for a podcast. I had to watch the rest of the episodes of Three Body Problem.
For the Three Body Problem spoiler that we recorded this morning.
See? Exactly.
Yeah.
So I finished the 8 extraordinarily epic, gigantic episodes of that show. And I mean, the one we just recorded this morning, where's that going out?
That is going out on Pilot Plus as soon as I've edited it.
Right.
So actually, for all we know, it might be up already by the time, because this podcast will go out on Monday.
Right.
It gives me a few days to sort out the Three Body Problem. It might be up now.
Suffice to say that I really liked the rest of the series of Three Body Problem. It is spectacular.
Let's just celebrate the fact that you were invited onto the podcast.
I was going
to say, were you pretty psyched, Boyd? You were allowed to be
very excited.
Part of a pilot spoiler?
Sit with Helen O'Hara.
Oh, God, no, please no, Boyd.
Fount of all knowledge.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Here we go.
Not this again.
Here we go.
But I mean, she was. James, you have to accept the fact
Listen.
You consider yourself to be this, like, super nerd, right? The nerd, as you're known in the Empire podcast. But in fact, you hadn't even read the books upon
That's
which
shocking,
Three Body Problem. And
it's
of course,
shocking.
Helen has twice.
Yeah.
She's watched the series twice.
Yeah.
This is why she's just
been on
superior.
Set.
Yeah, been on the set, wrote about it in Empire, etc. Did another interview with them as well.
Yeah,
I mean, she's just more of her expertise on this subject cannot be rivaled. That's why she's there.
It's true.
So yeah, it was enlightening.
Helen is 100% the Three Body Problem expert.
She really is.
No,
yeah.
Helen
no
is
doubt.
Brilliant. It's just when Boyd spends any kind of length of time with her, that's all we hear about, because it's like, oh, Helen said this and Helen's brilliant. And I accept all those things, but I just get a little jealous.
Yeah.
Okay, well, fair enough. At least you admit you're jealous.
Oh, yeah, always.
Jealous.
I always admit my flaws.
So there's that. I mean, it is absolutely astonishing, that show. It's going to be very high in my top 10, I think, in the end of the year.
Oh, spoiler.
Yeah. Exciting.
Yeah.
Above or below Love Rat?
At least equal.
Oh, okay, good.
Which
good,
is a big
high praise.
High praise indeed. The other thing that that happened. You know, we forget what things we've actually watched. So just looking, I was thinking, what was I watching the other day that then got me into a YouTube hole? Was on Sunday, ITV showed The Chase, the bloopers. Now, this is, as I'm sure James knows, pretty much an annual tradition, whereby The Chase, the greatest game show on TV, if not the greatest show on TV.
Whoa.
Go on.
You love The Wheel, so you're saying The Chase is better than The Wheel now?
They're on a par.
Wait, you said it was the greatest
Okay, The Chase has been going longer. The Chase is established as an incredible...
Fine.
And it's maybe like pure quiz show format. Maybe The Wheel is more game show.
All right, I just wanted you to qualify.
It's an important point.
Yeah.
It's an important point. They're both absolutely amazing. The Chase... But they have a compilation of bloopers, outtakes. And honestly, I was sat there on Sunday night watching this thing. I was cackling like an idiot.
Aww.
They're so funny. It's the funniest thing on TV. Just like Bradley Walsh getting stuff wrong and trying to get it right and just reading the script wrong and making terrible lame jokes and admitting it, and the contestants are really funny when the contestants try and be funny because don't walk off in the wrong direction. He has to
definitely do that.
But I love bloopers anyway.
Yeah,
like, I'll watch it to be right on the night, you know, etc. Yeah, yeah. Because I think bloopers are. And then what happened was, because I thought, oh, this is hysterically funny, these bloopers. I want to watch more bloopers on YouTube. And what I remembered was that the bloopers for Alan Partridge are hysterical. So there's you can see online. Yeah, check out the bloopers for Mid Morning Matters. Absolutely hilarious bloopers with him on that. And I think there are some for this time as well, bloopers from this time, you know, the lot. And they just watching Steve Coogan crack up because he knows how funny Alan Partridge is, and him making mistakes as Alan Partridge is just hysterically funny. So yeah, these are
some
of the funniest things.
Maybe we should do something
things.
On Plus, a little blooper segment where we go through some of our favourites, because I was watching Schitt's Creek the other day. It was really cracking me up as well. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I love a blooper. I mean, we had our own bloopers, of course, put together.
We did?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
Who can forget?
Maybe, you know, not quite as funny as the Alan Partridge ones, but yeah, on a par. So yeah, that is what I've been watching, plus the other things that I've forgotten. That I was watching. Oh, you know what I've watched a bit more of is Passenger. I haven't finished it yet. Have you watched any more of Passenger?
I haven't. I've only seen the first, I think, three or four.
I've actually got up to four. It's really enjoyable. And genuinely, the mysteries are really kind of fiendish. Like, you really want to know what happened. So I fully plan this Easter weekend to finish Passenger. It's all on ITV X.
Oh, this is the one with Woomy.
Yeah, Woomy, yeah. And written by bloke.
Yes, Buchanan.
Andy Buchanan.
Buchanan.
You're trying to make his name more difficult to pronounce, ironically. Yeah, it's really good fun. And I forgot how funny it was. Because I think there's a bit of a gap between me watching the first and second episodes and reviewing it. I was more thinking of the comparisons, as I banged on about at the time, on this very podcast with True Detective, etc. But then you watch it, it was billed as a comedy horror. I remember that when it was announced that he was writing it, I too said that's what they, and it's kind of accurate. It's funny.
I need to continue with that.
Weird, it's freaky, it's quite horrific. Yeah. So yeah, I'm really enjoying that.
I would like to share something with our listeners, if I may. The other night I was at home, as I am wont to do, watching things for this podcast. This is the only thing I'm allowed to do of an evening. And I received a text from RK Ribeiro.
Yeah, yeah,
and the text read thusly, James, at the RTS Awards and just seen Jizzlord! ! And that is a text. That is the text that's I have been waiting my life to receive. Kay has just seen Jizzlord at the RTS.
I was so excited. So Boyd and I went last night, and I walked in, and he's so recognisable, right? And
this is Luke Rollison.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God, Jizzlord in my head. I was like, the first person I needed to text.
Did you shout Jizzlord at
him? No, I didn't. So instead, that's why I got my phone out. I was like, I've got to tell James. He'll be so excited. But yeah.
Well, you're going to tell us a little bit of the RTS Awards when we get to news, aren't you?
Yeah, news. Yeah. Okay. Save it for news.
But I have watched the rest of Extraordinary. I finished season two of Extraordinary. So well enjoyed that. Yeah, that was fun. Also, in terms of finales, we had the finale of Halo last week. Obviously, I've been banging on about that recently. The finale to Halo, which was simply called Halo, was a banger. Like, it feels like they threw every single bit of outstanding mythology at that episode, and it all stuck. Like, it was good, it was scary, it was freaky, it paved the way for what's to come. And it more or less, from a kind of chronology point of view, takes us up to date, albeit in a slightly different timeline, with the first game. So exciting.
Is Halo on Prime Video?
Halo is on Paramount Plus.
I was going to say, because then they've got Fallout on Prime Video.
Yeah.
Like, series based on video games with one word in the title. It's quite confusing.
That's a very specific slice of genre.
Yeah, it is.
Shows based on video games with one word in the title.
Exactly. Yeah, I think so.
Well, technically Halo was, of course, called Halo : Combat Evolved.
Ooh. Let's always be accurate.
Yeah, let's always be accurate. Loved Halo, really, really enjoyed that. Obviously, Alice and Jack, watched the rest of that. Oh my God, I'm still not over it. I was traumatized. I also finished Trigger Point, which got very, very silly towards the end. Like, so outrageously silly, but it didn't stop me enjoying it. So that was fun. And then, of course, there's the other show I watched. Now, I alluded to this on Pilot Plus. So we were going to review X-Men 97 on this podcast, but we weren't given screeners in time. But I was like, no, due diligence. A few people had asked, you know, are you going to review it? So I was like, okay, you know, I'll fire up the first one. Looking forward to this. You know, because as I said to you guys, I used to watch the 90s animation X-Men. In fact, I used to go down with my friend Ollie. We would go to the, in our halls of residence at University of Birmingham, we would go down and we would camp out in the TV room like half an hour before it started so no one could like watch sport or soap operas. And we would watch X-Men the Animated Series in there and we loved it. So I was quite looking forward to this. And I should also say, this has had universal acclaim. Like, it has been incredibly well reviewed. People are loving it. They think it's brilliant. Empire gave it 4 stars. People are cock-a-hoop, if you will, for X-Men 97.
I think I know where this is going.
Yeah.
Listeners, I didn't enjoy it any level.
Why not?
Ultimately, and I know there are lots of people who are going to be enraged by this, and all I can do is apologise and say it's probably, maybe, possibly me, not you. I don't know. But it's... It's just, it felt like a kid's cartoon. Like the animation is retro. I'm making air quotes there, retro. So it's retro, so it's in keeping with the animated style of the 90s. But animation has moved on a little bit. And I found the animation being quite basic. While it was nostalgic, which is nice, I struggle a little bit with bad animation, so Invincible being a good example, so I struggle with that. But also, like, I found the storytelling in the first episode... Crucially, and an exciting thing happens at the end of the first episode, so maybe it gets really good from the second episode, I don't know. But I found the storytelling of the first one to be a bit basic and a bit reductive. And also, I struggled a bit with the voice acting, because it's very, very, very mannered and over the top, we're going to go and do this thing, and it's very exciting. And I was just like, oh, gods. And I really, really struggled through the first episode of this. So much so, at the end of the first episode, I was like, I am not watching any more of this.
Question.
I am done.
Were you grumpy before you started watching it?
No more than usual.
Oh, fine. Okay.
But the thing is, like, I love those characters. I'm really into the X-Men as a concept. You know, I love Wolverine, Jubilee, all that, Magneto. I love it. And which is why I like the original series in the 90s. But I just can't get on with, you know, the kind of, shall we say, universal storytelling. Mm. I think that's a good charitable term there. The slightly basic retro animation and the very mannered voice acting, all those things together just mean I can't invest myself in the story. And look, like I say, it's been critically acclaimed. People love it, much like they love, you know, Invincible, which I also don't like. So it's probably me, but disappointing. Didn't like it. Would you guys have liked it? I don't know. I mean, Boydie is an even bigger animation snob than I am. I mean, so he absolutely wouldn't have liked it.
No way I'm going to watch it now.
Kay's contrary by nature, so she'd have probably loved it.
Kay just...
Oh. Yeah. James, let it go. I like Doctor Who. Sue me.
It's absolutely fine, Kay. It's absolutely fine.
He's never going to go over that.
He won't. He's obsessed
ridiculous.
With it.
It's ridiculous.
So yes.
How many episodes of it are there?
When I watched it, I think only the first two are out. I think, I say, 3 or 4 are probably out now. But there were only 2 available when it first dropped. And I watched the first one and was just like, life's too short. To spend another 20,
it's a half hour
minutes.
An episode.
Yeah, yeah, they're not long, but I couldn't. Like I say, there have been discussions elsewhere in the Empire team. People are very much enjoying it. Thought it was great. So you know, it might just
maybe there are little young Jameses like sneaking into the common room with their little mates. What's his little mate called?
My friend Ollie.
Ollie. And they're going to watch
MN 97.
In their Passag way. They're going to get in there early and not
stopping
make sure
people
no
from
watch
watching Hollyoaks or Brookside.
Games,
yes.
Important football games that are on.
Vital.
Yeah. Mm. Oh, yeah. God, it's quite. You should go do a shout out, see if there's any equivalent. Imagine there's actually like an alternate universe with another version of James. And
can
all.
You imagine?
Yeah.
Yes. Imagine. A young me with hair and everything at university watching X-Men. Maybe
what does Ollie do now?
Ollie, I believe, now works for. I think he works for like one of the big energy companies in their PR department.
Yeah, big job.
Lovely.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you've definitely put me off watching it. That's
okay.
100%.
I would like to say, listeners, if you had a very different experience to me watching X-Men 97, write in and maybe we'll address it on Pilot Plus. So obviously, mainly do that if you're a Pilot Plus subscriber. Otherwise, you won't know if we addressed it or not. Or better yet, subscribe. Subscribe to Pilot Plus for the bargain price of $2.99 a month or less if you sign up for a year. And you get us in your ears a second time each week reviewing another show, doing fantastic spoiler therapy with names that Kay makes up for them, doing the post bag on the couch, which is a great name. We do spoiler stuff. We do on the post bag. You get spoiler specials like the 3-body problem, Boydie, which will be going up or may in fact be up, which is us talking about that. And we've got the showrunners. We've got David Benioff. We've got Dan Weiss. We've got Alexander Wu. Helen O'Hara, the best of all of us, is on there. You can hear Boyd fawning over her during these spoiler specials.
It's unbearable.
We should say that John Nugent was on that.
Nugent was on. Obviously, not as good as Helen O'Hara, clearly, but he's on there too.
Nugent will never get a shout out because he's not Helen.
No, that's true.
Give him a shout out.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, it's exciting. So please sign up to Pilot Plus. We'd appreciate it. That'd be great. Thanks.
Come on board.
Yeah, come on board. Mm. Where were we? Oh, yes, that was it. That was what we've been watching. I think that was the entire lot. So speaking of post bags and stuff like that, we should probably move on to this week's listener question, which Kay has not shared with us in advance.
What's all that?
So who knows? Who knows what lies in store for us?
Is there one?
Yes, there is one that I sent to you a few weeks ago that we didn't get round to. And it's from Annika Ruff, who says, which TV character would be your ideal partner? Now, she hasn't specified here. Could be, you know, just a work partner, could be life partner, could be whatever.
That's quite, so this is not a which TV character do we most fancy?
Could be. You can interpret it how you want.
So my long-standing answer to this is Sloane Sabbath from The Newsroom, which is Olivia Munn's character in The Newsroom. And obviously, on a very superficial level, she looks like Olivia Munn, right? Okay, so that's, you know, so clearly you're already off to a good start. But crucially, she is the biggest, like, dork. Like, she's such a nerd. And, like, and she's super into
yeah,
she's really into her, like nerdy knowledge and stuff like that. And she's really awkward. And there's something incredibly endearing and also very hot about that particular character. So Sloane Sabbath from The Newsroom would, I think, be my ideal partner.
Similarly, I would always say CJ Craig.
Yeah.
CJ Craig, even. Played by Alison Janney, of course. Although, I mean, I think she's absolutely phenomenal in every way. Funny, you know, just it's super smart, completely keep you on your toes in every way. But there is that episode where we follow her around on, you know, the faux.
Yes.
Which
all
is
access.
The worst episode in the history of The Rest Week. Totally centered on her. They fucked that up massively. But apart from that episode, she's astonishing throughout. And kind of on a similar, Elaine Bennis from Seinfeld. Elaine is hysterically funny. Julie Louis-Dreyfus at her best.
If we're on West Wing, Amy Gardner would also be on my list. From the West Wing.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I've got a whole long list. You know, you got your pace.
Suddenly she's got a whole long list.
Suddenly, all of a sudden, we have a list.
Well, we're usually lucky if we get one out of your own.
Well, you've got Pacey, obviously, and then all Seth / Sandy from the OC.
What about the main guy from The Night Agent? Who you lusted over.
No, that was just a very, like, carnal thing.
Okay. He was just a one-night stand, not an actual partner.
Right,
I see.
So what about Will from The Good Fight? The Good Wife, sorry.
He's dead by the time The Good Fight starts.
So obviously when he's alive.
You'd have him exhumed. Okay, fair enough.
Phil from Modern Family always makes me laugh.
Don't know who that is, but
okay. Yeah, I mean, of course he makes you laugh, but living being your partner, oh my God, it'd be an absolute fucking nightmare.
That is a
strange choice.
No, he would just make me happy. Like, he's lovable.
Yeah, but he's also, okay, fine. No.
He's a doofus, but
it's almost like David Brent. You know? I mean, he's the David Brent of Modern Family. That's the whole point.
Amazing.
How dare you? And then I'm just going to cheat a bit and say Ryan Reynolds from Welcome to Wrexham.
That is cheating a lot.
Yeah, no, but he's on TV.
And tenuous.
Playing a version of himself.
I'm sure.
Playing a version of himself.
Okay. What about one of the Treadaways? No, not impressed.
No.
You don't really know what they're like, do you, really, in answer to that question?
Well, I've seen...
You presumably, the Treadaway that would most interest you is the one that was in Star Trek Picard. So that's 100%. That's the
goes without saying.
Yeah, that's the intersection of our interests. Yeah.
Yeah,
I think so. Okay, cool. Good,
well done.
Good, you know. And no other objects of lust you wish to single out? Okay.
Oh my God, there's so many.
So many.
I've had to try and, I'll think of some recent ones in Ginny and Georgia, for example, but I won't go into that.
I see.
I see what kind of watch this is.
Bizarrely named
All I would say
people.
Is there is someone and something for everyone in
is
that
it
show.
Felix Mallard?
Is it Diesel What's-His-Face?
Hold on. He's Ellen's teenage son. So careful.
Is he called Marcus?
Yes, he plays Marcus.
Oh my God. She's gone full Cougar Town.
It's down to the Mallard.
Wow.
Mallard, and also Paul.
Here he is. Oh, it's all right. You're all right. He's 25 in IRL. He's 25.
Yeah, that's wow. Kind
that's
of
okay.
Okay, right?
That's okay,
maybe.
Yeah. That's fine.
Paul as well, he's older. Anyway, like I said, whatever you're into, there's something for everyone.
Wow.
Is there a Paul?
Felix Mallard, your little duck
puppet. Mayor, Scott Porter, the mayor of Wellesby, Massachusetts. Yeah. Okay.
Massachusetts.
Yeah.
So,
fine.
Get on it, G&G.
We've established, though, the most handsome man on TV right now is on Three Body Problem. It's, what's his name?
What, Raj?
Yeah,
but Raj. He's a bell end, so I think that takes away from it.
Wait, let me Google him. What was his character name Raj?
Yeah. His character name is Raj from Three Body Problem. He's definitely attractive, but he's also a bell end.
He is a bit of a twat, to be fair. Yeah. But I was just thinking of Kay's just lust list.
Yeah, he's okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. If we finish going through the contents of Kay's wank bank, then we can probably.
Oh my God.
We can probably move on.
I honestly can't believe you said that.
Oh, we're all reading from
and
that.
And knowing that your mum is listening, that obviously my mum is never going to listen to this.
It's fine. I send her a copy of the podcast every week. It's good.
Christ.
Oh my God.
Kay's mum is a big fan.
Great. I now can't proceed because I've ripped my ears off.
That was the listener question, kind of. If you have a question you would like us to answer, please do send them in to us at Pilot TV Pod on Twitter or Instagram, or directly to Kay at Kay Ribeiro, also on the Twitters. Time now for this week's guests. Now, we recorded, as I mentioned, our spoiler special for Three Body Problem this morning, along with the showrunners, Alexander Wu, David Benioff, and Dan Weiss. And that'll be up on Pilot either very soon or already. But in the meantime, we have two of the stars of the show, which is streaming now on Netflix. This is Benedict Wong, who plays a covert government operative, and John Bradley, who plays a physicist slash sort of snack lord. And they're up to their necks in mathematical conundrums and unexplained phenomena. Right. In the show, which we loved. Very quick drop in here to say that John Nugent's interview with Benedict Wong and Liam Cunningham has slight audio issues. This is due to the fact that he had to use his AirPods because he didn't have a microphone handy. So apologies for John sounding a little bit echoey. But more important than that, something I did forget to say when I intro'd this interview originally is that because the show has been out a little while, this is not a full spoiler interview, but there are spoilers in it. So if you haven't seen Three Body Problem yet and you don't want to know anything about it, then maybe skip this interview until you have, because there are some slight Three Body Problem season one spoilers within.
Benedict Wong and John Bradley, welcome to the Pilot TV podcast. How are you both?
Hello, mate.
I'm so excited to talk Three Body Problem with you both. I inhaled it in a weekend. Been dying to talk to somebody about it. Have you guys been in a similar boat? You've been sworn to secrecy for months?
Well, yeah. I mean, we started filming this. We probably got the first script nearly 3 years ago now. That's kind of how long we've been keeping these secrets and sort of holding this story in our minds. So it's nice to be able to talk about it a bit more freely. And that, you know, we're speaking to you on the day that the show finally comes out. So to get to talk about it, you know, is talk about all of those pivotal plot points and stuff with people in a much more open and free way feels really liberating. Yeah.
Is it a hard show to talk about? I get in terms of secrecy, but also in terms of science, you know, there's a lot of big concepts that you have to deal with.
I mean, well, there's massive themes, isn't there? But yeah, I mean, at the heart, it begins as a thriller, but yet, you know, as it unfurls, it's so such as genre-bending series. You know, there's philosophical elements to it.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, just in terms of the fact that we're dealing with, well, plots that complement each other, but we're dealing with two completely different timelines and a third element, which is a virtual reality video game, which flashes backwards and forwards in time all over the place. It's really hard just to get across just the timeline of it and just where each character lives and the world that each character inhabits. That's hard enough without even getting into the science stuff and the political themes and the moral outlook of the show. There's so much going on. We just hope people start watching it and then have it all unfold before them without any prejudice, really.
I think it's always good. I mean, for me, my viewing pattern would be just to watch the first two and just take a beat, really.
Yeah.
Because it's quite a dense watch, isn't it?
Yeah, very much so. Yeah.
What is this world that we build? 2, 3, 3.
Yeah, that's the way to do it.
There is such an insane sort of scale to it all. Did you get a sense of that scale when making it? Was it hard to get a handle on, you know, the scope of the show?
Necessarily have to, really. I mean, I think going into it, you do your research and you have that in mind. But I think day to day, it's just all about getting the 90-second scene that you're filming that day as right as you possibly can, and working on your own character internally and working on these little moments. I think if you went into it carrying the entire scope of it in your mind all the time, you'd just be distracted from your tiny little patch of that quilt, and everything else kind of takes. If everybody does their own job well enough, the entire piece will kind of take care of itself, really.
Yeah, I mean, it's great when you just, I mean, like, that's, you know, when you get asked about those kind of, is there any pressure about this or the money that is spent on this, you know, that's completely out the window. And you just focus on the action of your scene, and the world is built around by everyone else, which is fantastic.
Yeah,
it just leaves you really gobsmacked with it. Just see what they do with the trailers, and then, where the boys are kind of kicked down doors in terms of site-specific. Where we are, you know, is this a spoiler? Are we all right to talk about where we were? Or?
I think people will have seen the show.
Yeah. I mean, like, even like going to the United Nations.
Yeah, totally.
You know, I sat in the, there's a place called the Meditation Room at the UN by, sorry, I've forgotten, it's a Swedish artist. And world leaders have sat there. It's this small room with a tapestry of like a cubist tapestry of that denotes all faith, and this 6-ton iron block. The artist challenges you to look at that and what you could do with that. And you could make that either into a weapon of mass destruction or something to aid humanity. And, you know, experience.
Yeah, God.
We should all think about that too.
And yeah, such a privilege to be. I think it's quite rare to be shooting in the United Nations, right? That's not a place that gets used as a filming location very often.
Absolutely, because I was a bit worried. Where's everyone else gone?
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
It's like, we're all in the dog and dog. let's save humanity. So
how did you approach these characters then? Did you start with the scripts and then did you read the books? Were you familiar with the books ahead of time? Like, where did you begin?
I started with the scripts and then read the books, but I knew that the scripts are going to be so different from the books in terms of, you know, some of the sort of creative license that David and Dan and Alex have used in order to adapt them. But I just thought reading the books would at the very least give me a strong sense of the scientific principles behind it as a foundation to kind of build everything else. And I think the books go into exhaustive detail about the science of it, which, you know what I mean, if you're into that kind of thing, must be a joy to read. But if you're not, it's you really have to immerse yourself in the science of it to get the most out of the books, I think. But I think the books explain all of that side of it so well. That I think reading the books gave us all a grounding in the scientific logic at play, but it's different from me and Benny, because Benny's character is very central to the books and mine's only an avatar for a character that appears very briefly in the third book. So we probably had very different approaches to the book and book to script leap.
Yeah, I read the first two. I mean, it was a tough read.
Yeah,
you know, I'm not. So the science is dense, the games, you just think, God, I don't even know how they're going to film this. Yeah. And, you know, as you say, I sort of selfishly just hone in on what do I need to do?
Yeah.
What is the essence of my character? And, you know, this chain smoking, brash kind of, you know, just says it how it is, you know, we took it from there, but, you know, he's a counter-terrorist operative. And I just started from there, really. And I happened upon someone who worked in the services, as they call it. And it was an amazing source of information for me because, you know, that's, you are the job. There is nothing else. It's sacrifice for the greater good. You know, everything falls by the wayside. Your family lives are in tatters. I asked, like, what goes on in your room? They just don't have any time for anything else. It's kind of unkempt, you know, what type of cars they use. You know, it was great. I got to swap the cars and make it, you know, I just wanted to be specific and do it for them, really. Mm-hmm. What was inside the car? You know, when you're sort of doing surveillance and you're kind of, being a hawk to your mark, you're not going anywhere. You know, it's like literally if you need to go to the toilet, you're going in a bottle, you know. So all of that, that world, charging everything. And so I started with that, really. He's very much, him and Wade are, they're strategic, they execute and they get results. That's all they do. That's all they do. They're unflappable. You know, the obstacle is a stepping stone.
What about you, John? What sort of research did you do for Jack Rooney? Was there much of you that you brought into the character?
Yeah, well, the character was written for me by David and Dan and based on me, they say.
Mm.
So I think that they sort of realized shooting Game of Thrones for 10 years that I was nothing like that character, really. And they sort of knew that I had certain colors on my palette that I'd never played before and certain aspects of myself that I'd never been able to bring to my work. So they sort of gave me a platform to do that on. And then one thing that was a key to Jack's character, which was cut out of the show, and it's the one thing that I challenged them on and I lost out ultimately, was that the scripts and scenes that we shot were very clear to point out that Jack is newly rich from a very kind of ordinary working class background.
Mm.
And those details were missing from the final show. And I actually thought the only thing where I've challenged them on it and thought it affects so much about his character to know that he was poor and got rich recently in life, because he shows everything about his attitude to the world and how he sees himself and how he sees his wealth. He just can't believe his luck, that he's kind of a bully because he thought that this would never happen to him. And it kind of, you know, slightly solidifies his place within that group a little bit. So even though that information is not in the show, that was still very clearly in my mind about this is a guy who is exceeded his wildest expectations of himself and now just wants to enjoy his life. And I think that given what happens to Jack at the end of episode 3, that makes it slightly more poignant that all his dreams have come true and he's only got a couple of months of happiness and then he's gone.
Yeah.
But even stuff that doesn't make it into the show still informs your relationship and your understanding of your character.
As we mentioned, this is such a huge, you know, ambitious show. Does it feel like it's kind of part of a new wave of hard sci-fi that couldn't have been made before, that creators are more ambitious and audiences are more open to dense stories like that?
I think so. It's tough, though, that you know, people talk about the budget of this show and the kind of the scale of it, but this source material can only really be adapted with this level of budget. So it's kind of a unique thing that there are so few projects in the future that'll have this kind of backing to it and have this kind of freedom to execute the adaptation in the way that they want to. So I hope it is a whole new approach to sci-fi, but I also realize that this is a very unique project and you may not see something else like this for quite a long time.
Yeah, I mean, this isn't a spoon feeder, you know, you're here to work for your dinner, definitely.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, finally, the books give us some idea, but do you have any sense of how it all ends for the series and for your characters? I mean, John, we kind of know how your characters end, but nothing is certain, I suppose.
Nothing's certain, no. No, but that's the thing about this show. For various reasons, David and Dan are only bound by their imagination, so anything is possible.
You know, and it's been given the blessing by Sershin for Dan, David and Alex to run away now with this story, and it's much more a global story as opposed to, but yet still keeping the Asian spine and introducing Dasha from, you know, his Manchester and Jess Hong's, Jin Chong's character from New Zealand. We have Mexican and African American, and that's it for what is a looming existential threat. We see the world and that's it. It's a global story.
Well, I really hope we see more of this global story. I can't wait to inhale season 2, 3, 4, whatever.
Other people are binging. You're just inhaling.
Yeah.
yeah. You can digest it as much as however you like.
All right. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
All the best.
That was John Bradley and Benedict Wong. Time now for this week's news. We have already spoken about the big news of the week, which is, of course, the harsh and undue cancellation of the Lazarus Project, but there has been other stuff happening. Boydy, where should we begin?
Well, should we do... well, there's some really good news. So before we get to the RTSLs that Kay and I attended last night...
Along with Gislord.
Along with Gislord, the Royal Television Society, which I think it's fair to say are second only to the BAFTAs, the TV BAFTAs in prestige. So we'll talk about them. So I just wanted to fit in a brief mention of the fact that Feud, Capote versus the Swans, which we've been waiting for months and months and months, it's aired in the US, has finally got a premiere date in the UK on the Disney Channel, Disney Plus, as it's known, April 17th, everyone. All episodes will be available on that very day. Here we go.
We've got screeners,
that's the good news. We've got screeners. It's also good news. The, shall we say, classic peculiar news is that the all episodes are under embargo for review until the day it comes out in the UK, even though it's all been reviewed already in America, where it's been on for
I call
months.
Bullshit.
Mickey's always busting our ass, man.
So we're not going to be able to review it. Incredulously, I'm incredulous.
Come on, there must be some wiggle room. Boy, get in touch with them.
You know, they set the rules. They make the rules.
That, I must admit, that is the most bullshit thing. Where they go, we're going to embargo this thing that has been widely reviewed across the internet.
Yeah. So, but there you go. I mean, what can I say? Someone has made that decision. But the good news, let's focus on the good, which is that it will be on April 17th. We just don't expect us to be able to review it until that time, maybe on Pilot Plus. If it's not, we'll see what else is on that week. But then we move on, shall we, Kay, to the RTS Awards?
I'm going to do a little bit of other news,
okay,
which is that Brett Goldstein is going to guest star in Shrinking Season 2, which I'm excited about on Apple.
That is exciting.
That's a bit of exciting news. Also, Noah Wiley, he has, he's going to be in a new medical drama.
The Next Generation.
Yes. It's called The Pit. So it's 15 episodes and it is about the frontline medical workers in Pittsburgh. And it's described as a realistic examination of the challenges facing healthcare workers in today's America, as seen through the lens of the frontline heroes working in a modern day hospital in Pittsburgh. I'm excited about that. I love him.
He is good. Was he the only cast member who went all the way through the show? Or did he? Did he? Because did he step out in the last season before the end and then come back? I can't remember. Do you know what? I don't know. I have no idea. It's been a long time. I don't remember.
We need to watch the pilot, though. Someone suggested that.
Someone did suggest that for our From the Vault segment on Pilot Plus. Yes, that's absolutely true. Other big news. Stephen Knight has confirmed that the Peaky Blinders movie is going ahead and Cillian Murphy is going to be in it and it starts shooting in Digbeth. Because of course it does, in September.
But this is film news, you get
it. Yeah, but he's TV adjacent, isn't it?
Now he's flexible.
Now you're being loosey-goosey.
Yeah. Oh, am I now? I think that's fine. If you want something specifically TV related, there's Foundation news.
Oh, God, no. Go back to the film news, please.
Pilu Asbake from Game of Thrones, the Crow's Eye, is going to be joining Foundation next season.
From Borgen, more importantly.
Sure. As the mule is being recast. It is no longer Ola's dad from Sex Education. It's now going to be... Euron Crow's Eye.
More news. Elizabeth Moss and Kerry Washington are going to star in Imperfect Women for Apple, which I'm excited about. It's the adaptation of Araminta Hall's novel of the same name.
So there's another upcoming... Oh, my God. Right. Listen to this. This gets more exciting. I just realised this is bigger news than I suspected. You were talking about Elizabeth Moss's new project. She's upcoming April 30th on Hulu in America, but no, I have not heard any hide nor hair of it coming to UK TV, a bit like Feud they've been banging on about for weeks. The Veil is an upcoming American thriller, limited series, written by Stephen Knight and starring Elizabeth Moss. A thriller series about a potentially deadly game of truth and lies as two women travel from Istanbul to Paris and London, with one of them possessing a secret that the other needs to expose. Elizabeth Moss, Josh Childes, Dali Bensala, Yumna Marwan, Alex Sekharanu, who was in God's Own Country, James Purefoy. I mean... Why the fuck do we know about this?
This is a very Stephen Knight heavy podcast.
Oh my God, he's so busy.
This man never stops writing.
Never stops writing. So that's exciting, isn't it? So yeah, an Elizabeth Moss Stephen Knight project is arriving on American TV any day now. In a month's time, April 30th. But who the fuck knows when it's going to come to UK television?
Who knows? Do you know what's more exciting than that, though?
What?
There is a new arm to the Boshiverse. Yes, Maggie Q is going to be leading another spin-off of Bosch as Renee Ballard, who's in charge of like their division's cold case division. So I imagine it's going to be like a cold case procedural, but with Maggie Q set in the Boshiverse.
That's not more exciting than Stephen Knight.
Yeah, but it's part of the Boshyverse.
Yeah, but it's not more exciting.
Does it have a name?
You said it was more exciting.
Does it have a name, says Kay. I don't know. No, it doesn't. No, it doesn't. It's just currently called The Untitled Bosch Spinoff.
Exciting.
Which is an unorthodox title, but I'm here for it. Did you guys watch the trailer for The Penguin? Colin Farrell Penguin series?
No. But I am excited about that.
It looks interesting.
Does it look good?
But the thing is, the only thing about it I would say is, it's Colin Farrell as a penguin. He doesn't sound like Colin Farrell. He doesn't look like Colin Farrell. So, to a certain extent, why is it Colin Farrell?
Well, why not?
Yeah, it's a bit like saying, I mean, there's loads of characters that are basically prosthetics and makeup and...
It's true, yeah.
Back off, Colin Farrell. I mean, we're going to see him looking like Colin Farrell in Sugar, so that's fine.
And having seen Sugar, you now realise why it's a good thing for Colin Farrell to look like Colin Farrell.
Apart from that,
you didn't watch it?
No, I haven't watched it.
Brilliant. Great news story. Love it.
Well, tell us what you think then, big boy.
Oh my God, no, please never call me big boy.
Is that what Helen calls you, Boydie?
Yeah, Oh my God.
Make it stop.
Please God. I mean, thankfully, I can only assume Helen doesn't listen to the podcast.
No, that is true. She doesn't, so you're fine.
Of course she doesn't waste her time with this.
Okay, let's talk about something else. Euphoria. So,
yes,
Euphoria,
that's interesting.
First of all, I cannot believe there have only been two seasons of Euphoria. Because it feels like there should have been like nine by now. The third season has been delayed now to 2025. Is this going to happen, do we think?
No.
Well, No. Well, there are rumours circulating. So there are some stories in the entertainment press saying that it's been either been cancelled or blah, blah, blah. HBO have denied that and came back and said, I think they said they're starting to finish this soon in the summer. So
yeah.
I think they're pretty firmly shut that speculation down. But it is interesting how long it takes. It's basically, a lot of it's down to showrunner Sam Levinson, who is an absolute maverick, loose cannon. And he was on some kind of Q&A recently where he talked about his writing, saying that, like, you know, it just writes hundreds of versions of each episode, that's then ditches them all
so
and goes...
He said he writes the series, but he does rewrite.
Yeah.
But whenever he does a rewrite of an episode, he does it from memory. He doesn't go back to the original screenplay and tweak it. He just does it again from scratch.
It explains a lot because Euphoria, much as I love it, and I do love it in many ways, it has loads of loose threads hanging around.
Because he forgets about them.
Well, now you know why. It's banana crackers. It's crazy.
And I think people have made the point that this is very much a male showrunner.
By people, you mean Sophie Bessel, who mentioned this on Twitter.
It's a great point.
She's like, all the people who I've encountered like this are all men.
Yes.
I have no problem believing that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. I was slightly hesitating to name her, but you know, fine.
Sorry, Sophie.
Yeah. She's
listen,
she's
there's
brilliant.
Nothing. There's nothing wrong with what she tweeted. It's completely true.
Yeah. Well, yeah. No, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it at all. But yeah, but it's completely true. And he is. I mean, he's a bit of a dick, isn't he? Just generally, is that
big dick energy, and I don't mean that in a good way.
No, that film we did, Malcolm and Marie, was I thought dodgy, just intrinsically dodgy. And he's always on the verge of dodge. I mean the whole, you know, that the idol.
Yeah.
He's getting away with a lot. It's a shame because I do think Euphoria is, you know, is the best thing he's done, and it is, and that a lot. I mean, you know, he's the writer. A lot of that, the acting is incredible. The boldness of that show is astonishing.
So we've had two seasons, and then those specials, the two specials.
Yeah, I didn't
like
the specials.
Yeah,
I didn't like the specials. I did like the specials. The band, this sound coming
but
up.
Not these specials. Okay.
Not these specials. Yeah. There was another thing I wanted to mention though. Have we finished that bit of news?
RTS Awards.
Not yet. No, I'm leaving that right to the end.
Ooh,
okay.
Tease.
There's the story about the Netflix chart. I just wanted to mention the Netflix chart that the Three Body Problem, as previously discussed and future discussed as well, debuts at number 2 in the Netflix chart behind The Gentleman. So The Gentleman has done really well for Netflix. I think it's already been recommissioned. I think it will be.
Has
recommissioned.
It?
I think it will be if it hasn't been already. But Three Body Problem at least is number 2.
That bodes well.
It bodes well. But as I think we said on the spoiler special, we do need people to watch it.
Yeah, because it costs $20 million an episode.
Yeah,
so.
Allegedly.
Yeah.
We really do, because it needs to be number one. And I think it's number one, maybe it's just number one now. But we need to give it as much of a boost as humanly possible because it's not resolved.
Yes.
Should we say in spoiler
alert? As we were saying in the spoiler, if you could all just, before you go to bed, put your Netflix on and set it to streaming Three Body Problems so it just streams all night, that would be great.
Exactly. But good news for The Gentleman, which I really, really liked.
Yes. That's 2 stars, Empire Magazine.
Oh, God. reviewed it?
I will not name and shame. I will not name and shame.
That's ridiculous.
Was it you?
It was not.
Good.
No, I liked it. I thought the gentleman was loads of fun.
Anyway, the RTS Awards. What do you think was the biggest surprise, Kay, of the night?
Chislord.
I'll tell you what it is. I know what it is.
Go on, say it.
The winner of the Leading Actor Female Award, for which the nominees were Jodie Whittaker in Time, Sarah Lancashire in Happy Valley, and Tamara Lawrence, also in Time. And the winner was Tamara Lawrence.
Yeah.
I think that's a massive surprise that Sarah Lancashire didn't win that award. And the Leading Actor Male is a little bit surprising as well. Gary Oldman, the aforementioned man who likes, say, latex disguise, much to James's fury, nominated for Slow Horses. Timothy Spall, nominated for The Sixth Commandment. Interestingly, so that's Lee Pulitzer. As my friend pointed out last night when we sat there, he's only really in that first episode, majorly. You can see him in flashbacks after that. But, you know, he's not
who?
Timothy Spall in The Sixth Commandment.
You see him more than one episode.
Mainly in the first episode.
No.
You see him in flashbacks after that, yeah. But
you're still seeing him. It doesn't.
I know, but, you know, it's just interesting.
Oh, my God, you've drunk the literal Kool-Aid like James. That still counts. He's still, you know, lead performer.
Yeah, I'm not saying it doesn't count. I'm just saying, well, it's not that offensive point. I mean, it was my mate who said
this is unexpectedly controversial.
Yeah, God, I didn't think it was going to be that controversial. No, quite right.
I'm
he was absolutely
brilliant.
Yeah. But, you know, he's not throughout all three episodes. Anyway, but the winner was Kane Robinson for Top Boy.
So that was my category.
That was your fault.
Did you vote in one of these?
Yeah, in two of them.
Did you? What was the other one?
Best supporting male.
I was going to say that yours would have almost certainly have been the comedy performance male and female, because they had the hint of K about them.
No, I would have loved it. I did comedy last year, but no, this year was dramatic performance. But I can say it now, I voted for Spall and I was surprised. Kane Robinson is brilliant, but I thought he had it in the bag. But I was happy that Aina Hardwick received the award for best supporting male dramatic performance.
Good. Well, also, you would have been excited about the comedy performance winners. Perhaps you can tell us who won in those particular categories, Kay?
Best female comedy performance was won by Bemisola Ikemelo for Black Ops, which I was fucking delighted about. And I was particularly delighted also that comedy male performance was won by Hamid Animashon.
Yes, both Black Ops, which you absolutely loved. We all loved, to be fair, and it was on our Shows of the Year list last year.
Yeah, they so deserve it.
The weird thing about the RTS Awards is that there are two separate categories, comedy, drama and scripted comedy. I was one on the panel for scripted comedy, and scripted comedy was won by Extraordinary, and which I think, you know, fair enough. And Big Boys was on that list as well, and Such Brave Girls, right? So Black Ops was on the list. So in my category, we had Extraordinary, which won, Black Ops, and Such Brave Girls, right? That's in scripted comedy. In comedy drama, you had Big Boys, There She Goes, and Juice, which Juice won. Marwan Rizwan and Russell Tovey. Now, for me, Juice is absolutely in the same kind of show as Extraordinary or Black Ops or whatever. These shows are all kind of comedy/comedy drama, scripted comedy/ with quite a lot of drama and a lot of comedy. And the difference between them is wafer thin. Mm. So I think they should look at that. It's weird.
And Phelpsy walked away with a couple.
Yes,
for the Sixth Commandment.
More importantly.
Well deserved. Yep.
Yes, brilliant.
Very exciting. Do you know what I like about the RTS Awards? They give you a little what the judges thought soundbite.
Yes.
Which no one else does. I think that's great.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's absolutely brilliant.
Have you got
brilliant.
Them written down?
No, I'm just looking at them now. Yeah. Like so with the for Phelpsy's win for writer/drama for the Sixth Commandment, it's commenting on the writer's work on the show. The judges said, this piece was both sensitive and savage in equal measure. And while never sensational, it was sometimes almost unbearably difficult to watch. Mm. I quite like that, where you get inside their heads.
If you're the head of the jury, which I have been a few times.
I love that you had to get that in, but yes, go on.
You have to write that thing. You have to write that.
The head of the jury has to do it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they can't pull their finger out.
Yeah. But let's just acknowledge the fact that that Phelpsy quite rightly won and beat Sally Wainwright. You know, I mean, that was incredible.
Impressive work.
How phenomenal she is. Yeah.
Also, comedy writer won by our fave, Jack Rook, for Big Boys.
Yeah.
Another deserved win.
Correct. Any other categories worth doing? EastEnders one of your favourites, so we can continue.
We should say
Bella Ramsey won supporting actor female. Sorry,
true.
For Time.
The RTS Society gold medal went to Dame Esther Ranson, and her daughter gave an incredible speech on her behalf. Well, actually, just read out an acceptance speech from Esther. That was very nice to hear. And the judges' award went to Mr. Bates versus the Post Office.
Right, let's move on to this week's reviews. And first up this week, we have Sugar, which stars Colin Farrell. And you can see it's Colin Farrell because he has Colin Farrell's face and Colin Farrell's voice. this is Apple's latest single word S show. And it's a noir drama in the kind of classic gumshoe mold. This sees Colin Farrell as PI John Sugar, and he specializes in locating missing people. But it all unravels when he takes on a case for an LA movie mogul whose granddaughter has dropped off the map. Boydie, in keeping with Apple's predilections, please review this using only words starting with the letter S.
So, sexy.
Superb.
Superb. Strange. I can't carry on. Gonna have to use some other words. This is a fascinating show. It begins with a kind of black and white, for some reason, set piece in, is it Hong Kong?
And it's Japan. A good question. I think it's set in Japan. You see a top-down shot of him walking through a hotel lobby, which looked to me entirely CG.
Yeah, maybe.
Like computer constructed. Like it seemed it seemed a little bit off. Yeah. But it was not, you know.
My first reaction, it's showing black and white, beautiful black and white initially, this whole opening sequence of Sugar. And of course, I watched this, I think the day after the day before, I watched Ripley, which we'll be reviewing, we're coming to in Plus, I think, because it's embargoed, strictly embargoed.
Yes.
And Ripley is entirely in black and white. I thought, well, this is weird, two black and white shows in the same week. But this, for some reason, is the only sequence in Sugar that is in black and white.
Doesn't it flit a little bit? On there some occasional moments? Maybe I've just imagined.
Not in the first episode. I only watched the first episode. Oh. But I don't think, I think it's just been, is that opening sequence that's in black and white.
Yeah, it's just the opening sequence.
And it's not even a big flashback. It's just like what he's doing. And
I feel like it's paying homage to these black and white Hollywood films that he loves so much.
Oh, 100%. But still, why isn't the rest of it in black and white? Anyway, what happens is he then is hired to go back to California, where he's based, LA, where he's based. And he's hired by a kind of Hollywood mogul to find his missing daughter, Hollywood mogul Jonathan Siegel, played by the great James Cromwell, whose daughter's gone missing. And the character of Sugar, then John Sugar, played by Colin Farrell, then proceeds to kind of explore in a kind of Chinatown meets The Long Goodbye meets 40s film noir detective characters, particularly riffing on all of those things. He kind of meets various people who may or may not be loosely connected to this woman who's gone missing. And the kind of the interesting, unusual and unique selling point of this show is, because obviously, you know, the short, you know, you think, oh, okay, yeah, Colin Farrell is an American private detective investigating an interesting mystery, fine. But the twist is, or not the twist, but the interesting thing is, this guy is obsessed himself with movies and film noir. And he's like, at one point he says, you know, he starts talking about, pontificating about films to this woman. And she says, oh, so you're a bit of a film buff. He goes, I'm not just a film buff. I'm fucking obsessed with films. And he really is. And so you get clips they have like on TV that happen to be showing the Maltese Falcon or whatever. And so it kind of incorporates his obsession with these kind of films, with those classic films that I've mentioned, woven into the story, which itself is very reminiscent of that kind of film. And I love that kind of film as well. The Long Goodbye and Chinatown are two absolutely of my favourite films of all time. They're fantastic. And this definitely doesn't pretend in any way not to be trying to follow in those footsteps in a really, not, I thought, in a kind of lovely, pastiche, interesting, quite funny way, in a way as well. And he's really good. I mean, Colin Farrell, always a winner, fantastically charismatic person in it. And Amy Ryan pops up, is always brilliant. Last seen in Only Murders in the Building. She's fantastic. So it was a bit of a, this is the kind of thing I would really eat up whole, so to speak. And it's really good. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, won't be laying off the sugar.
Absolutely not.
It's described as a genre-bending contemporary take on the private detective story, which ordinarily would be like an alarm bell in my head.
There's nothing supernatural going on. You should be fine.
I know, but you know, genre-bending. But I really enjoyed this. I liked it a lot. And the black and white effect, you know, at the beginning didn't put me off because, as Boyd says, it's just, you know, touched upon and then goes. And I just really like this character. So he is, as Boyd said, obsessed with old movies, and he's obsessed with finding missing people, but without any violent means. So he's very benevolent and he's empathetic and he's a good guy, essentially. He has issues, of course, they all have issues, some medical ones, some we don't fully understand. And there's a memory of a woman he's lost, there's always a woman. But I just really, I found him very intriguing. And the whole case is intriguing, but him particularly, I'm intrigued by, and I enjoy this sort of creative flair of this.
Mm. It's interesting that he's such a nice guy, because those hard-boiled detective dramas, the detectives are often massive dicks. Mm. And I mean that literally as well as figuratively. Private dicks, in fact. But they're, he sits down and he talks to this homeless guy and kind of encourages him to get back in touch with his family. Mm. Even at the beginning, when he's dealing with a kidnapper, he's incredibly, kind and understanding. He doesn't really want to hurt him, but if he has to, he's instantly, you warm to him, I think, quite early on.
James, the small detail of catching the fly with a chopstick and then letting
it go. Go full Miyagi and then let it go again. Yeah, that tells you everything you need to know about him. It's a really interesting one. This is going to live or die by how strong the mystery is, though, really, isn't it? So, we set up the mystery here, this kidnapping case, which he becomes very kind of emotionally tied to quite early on and can't let go of. And it's just going to depend on how this
unravels. Except it will and it won't, because there's a long tradition of, in film noir,
true,
of mysteries that don't really have massive MacGuffins and kind of meander towards a semi-conclusion.
And may or may not get properly resolved.
And may or may not be properly resolved. And so I've got a feeling that that might be one of those.
It's not about the destination, it's about the friends we made along the way.
Exactly. Is it though? I think I might find that frustrating.
Yeah, I mean, it often is frustrating, but there are classic examples.
Yeah, that's very noir.
Yeah.
Mm. I might need you to be the canary and you might have to watch the full series and let me know.
Oh, I will definitely watch this full series. Okay, there's good. Absolutely no doubt whatsoever.
It's good. Very good.
Directed the whole thing's directed by Fernando
Moraes,
thank you, who did City of God, etc. Who's the whole thing looks phenomenal. Thinking about it, I've just realised why maybe goes from black and white to colour, because it's the colour, the Hollywood, the LA of this is very, very primary colour, vibrant. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's why. Yeah, it kind of emphasises that, doesn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. Sugar Then, which is on Apple TV Plus, and when does it land, Boydie?
Friday, the 5th of April, Apple TV Plus 2024.
Excellent. Next up, we have Avoidance. And because I like to take things literally, I have absolutely avoided this in that I've not watched it. But only because I opted to review Star Trek Discovery instead. Really so that Kay didn't have to. So in many ways, it was an act of kindness. But don't let that put you off, because Kay did not avoid Avoidance. Kay, what is this all about?
So this is Ramesh Ranganathan's comedy series. It's on season 2, and it focuses on a character called Jonathan, played by Ramesh, and Claire, played by Jessica Knappert. And their relationship is broken down in series 1, and now they're co-parenting their son, Spencer. And as series 2 kicks off, Jonathan is basically rocking a new look. He's got a new hobby. All I'll say is it involves an obscene amount of Lycra, and he's ostensibly got a new mindset, but he hasn't really, because he's still as sort of eternally worried about everything, conflict avoidant. And but he has decided he wants to win Claire back. And so that's the big thing for this first episode. He has to find a way of trying to win her over, but there are some obstacles in the way, namely that Claire's got a new super keen boyfriend, played by Matthew Lewis, who is desperate to kind of get his feet under the table. But also Aisling B pops up as a love interest of sorts for Jonathan, Ramesh's character. She's got a soft spot for him, and she pursues him at all costs. So yeah, he has to navigate that. Do you know what? I'm going to be really honest. When the first series aired, I'm a massive Ramesh fan, and I didn't quite get on board with the first. I think I just watched the first episode and I wasn't, as taken with it as I thought I would be. I reviewed this for work and it's really good. So I might actually go back now and watch the full series. But season 2 is gets off to a really good start. It's really funny. The characters are great. And I just think Aisling B is such a good addition to the cast. I mean, obviously we had our fill of her in Alice and Jack, and we loved her in that, and now she's in this, so it's a good role.
She is a massive MVP, great supporting role person at the moment, because she's brilliant in Alice and Jack.
Yeah.
Alice and Jack. I keep calling Alice and Jack, as in Alison Jack.
Jackson.
And she's absolutely phenomenal in this, because her character is into Ramesh's character, Jonathan, as soon as she claps eyes on him, really, which is such a brilliant, because he's obviously in real life, if anyone listens to the Wolf in Our podcast that we love and admire so much, he's a man riddled with doubts about himself and his body and all this kind of stuff. She just instantly like almost like falls in love with him, doesn't she? She claps eyes on him, which is a brilliant kind of twist, and she plays that so well without it being in any way very convincing. She's funny and clever and, you know, hilarious. So it's just brilliant casting to have her on the show. I mean, I really liked the first series anyway. Because I think I got it quicker than you did, Kay, of the first series.
Yeah, okay.
But it is a step up. It's a real step up. And I think...
That's what I sort of meant.
Yeah, I know. But everyone in it is brilliant. Because Romesh's character, Jonathan, he's quite an internalizes everything, but they've very cleverly given him some excruciating things to do. There's a performance at the school, school concert, which is... If we strap James down, I mean, he's doing whatever he's doing. But if we strap down, it's properly excruciating.
Yeah, it's bum-clenching. Oh, God.
Genuinely, brilliantly excruciating. And you have to admire the fact that Romesh writes this stuff with his mate and writes unbelievably embarrassing things for himself to do. Benjamin Green, he co-writes it with.
Oh, yeah, he said before him, Lycra.
Yeah, all of it. It's like, suddenly he rises on set, what have I written for myself this week to completely humiliate him in front of... an audience of millions. He's really funny. Lisa McGillis and Mandip Dillon as the women in a relationship who are kind of brilliantly scathing about Jonathan.
Exactly.
Fantastic.
Mandip plays his sister and she's married to Courtney, played by Lisa McGillis. And oh my God, McGillis is on cracking form, being like absolutely ripping him to shreds because she's hormonal, she's pregnant, and she's got no time for his pathetic ways.
And the son, Spencer, played by Kieran Loughendre, is really good, really convincing, does a brilliant job bouncing off Romesh. It's really, really good, honestly. It's one of the best sitcoms around for a long time, I think. And I've watched three episodes of this series and they're all absolutely hilarious. They have proper classic memorable scenes that, I think sitcoms, to really punch through, need to have moments like the Romesh performance, musical performance, shall we say, without spoiling it, that really you will not forget in a hurry. They're so funny. And there are like farcical elements. There's constantly people lying to each other about what they're doing.
There's
a whole thing about the clearing out of the house of hand-me-down clothes that is really, really funny. It just works really well. Oh, and Matthew Lewis, who plays the new love interest of his ex, Claire, Jessica Lambert's character, is the guy from the Harry Potter films, who's famously completely ripped. And there's a brilliantly gratuitous scene where he's got his shirt off. And Ron character's like, oh my God, fucking hell. This is why she's into him. It's an absolute joy. Avoidance, yes. Friday as well. Friday, the 5th of April, 9:30 p.m., 2024, BBC One. And all six episodes are available on the BBC iPlayer as a box set, James.
What
special
a
treat for you.
Yeah.
Yes. I shall look forward to avoiding those.
Tell us, James, tell us all about Star Trek Disco.
Oh, funny you should ask, Voidy. Yeah. Funny you should ask, because next we have the fifth and final season of Star Trek Discovery on Paramount Plus, which sees Captain Michael Burnham and the crew set off into the Big Black for one final farewell tour. Now, I'm going to tiptoe a little bit around some of the plot points here, because this series is quite interesting, because it picks up a thread from a previous Star Trek and runs with it, sort of tying this final series back to Treks of Yore, which you'll either kind of get on board with or you won't. But honestly, I don't think it'll affect your enjoyment one way or the other. But a lot of how much you enjoy this, I think, might depend a little bit on how much you enjoyed season four. So a lot of people, myself included, did not enjoy season four. Some people have very much liked it because it was very much around a problem solving. So they had this spatial anomaly, the DMA, and they spent the entire season trying to solve the problem of that. So it was a big problem solving mission. This is similar, but they're on a hunt for something. So it's a treasure hunt mission. So I've seen the first four of these, and it almost takes like an Indiana Jones format where they're following a clue and there are like riddles and stuff and they're trying to find whatever it is they need to find to get to the next clue. And that's broadly speaking what the episodes so far have been like. So it's going somewhere, but I found the previous season, even though the fate of the entire galaxy was like at stake, I found it quite low stakes. Like, it just felt a bit like, I don't really care about this spatial anomaly. It's quite boring. And because all the characters are quite bland and forgettable, I'm just like, wasn't really feeling it. And I'm still a little bit there with this one. And I think my problem with Discovery is that first season of this for me was definitely the best. Michelle Yeoh, absolute legend. Really great. The Klingon stuff was really interesting. The plot was fascinating. They brought in the Mirror Universe. You got Jason Isaacs in there as well. Great characters. You were really into it. And then those characters have bit by bit gone away. That first season was great. Second season, they brought in Pike. They brought in Anson Mount. They brought in Rebecca Romijn. So again, great characters. Spock came in as well, Ethan Peck. And it's like, okay, brilliant. And then you had the bit where it all goes a bit sort of different in season three. And then season four, they go, you know, they're in the very, very, very distant future. And I just felt it, I got quite disconnected from it. And I think partly because the era they're in is so far in the future that they're trying to lean much more into the technology to differentiate it from the previous treks, like having like nacelles on ships floating around and personal trans. No, no one walks anywhere. Like, and they're like, oh, do you want to go to the bar, get a drink? They'll tap the little transporter and just appear in the bar. Like, the thought of walking to the barge wouldn't even occur to them at this point. They've all got very lazy. So little things like that bug me, and like the phasers like materialize out of thin air, and it just feels a bit unnecessary, this reliance on what they call programmable matter. So I don't love that. But more than that, and I've mentioned this before, to this day, and we are five seasons in, I can't name half the people on the bridge of the Discovery. I do not know their names. I do not know anything about them. I'm not interested in them. They are utterly unmemorable. Whereas Strange New Worlds, two episodes in, I knew everyone on that ship. I knew their backstories. I was invested in them because the characters were really interesting. And I think Discovery just has a character problem. I think Michael Burnham herself is quite good. And I like Cleveland Booker as well. I think he's a good character. But beyond them, I just don't care about any of them. And I think that's the difficulty I'm still having with Discovery. I can't bring myself to engage with these characters. And so because of that, the sort of week-to-week stories just don't seize me in the way that Strange New Worlds does. So that's a little bit of a shame. I will say, Callum Keith Rennie, who you may remember as Leoben from Battlestar Galactica, he joins the show as Captain Rayner. And he is a bit of a breath of fresh air because he's abrasive and he's rude and he's difficult and he's quite aggressive. And he shakes things up a little bit. So I quite enjoy it. I like that answer generally, but I enjoyed his addition to this. So that's keeping things interesting. And I will say that, so episode four, which is the one I'm currently watching, I've not finished episode four. Kay's very excited about this. Episode four seems to be doing something, like, it seems to be moving things on a bit. Oh, so okay. The first three episodes, I felt, oh, there you go. Bit of sarcasm from Kay. First three episodes, Kay's a bit boring. The fourth episode, though, feels like maybe it's mixing things up a bit. So, yeah. So maybe this will pick up a little bit. But yeah, I think fundamentally, it's not a plot problem I've got here. It is very much a character problem, which I'm still struggling to get past. Bring back Michelle Yeoh. Bring back Jason Isaacs. That's
always
my takeaway.
Bring back Jason Isaacs.
Yeah. But yeah. So,
okay, interesting.
So Star Trek's coming then, which is on Paramount Plus.
When, James? You tell us when. I don't know when.
Well, I just, you are my personal listings. Gosh. I just assume you would know, Boydie. Assume you'd know.
Unbelievable. I genuinely don't know, actually.
You've failed me. Star Trek Discovery airs on Thursday, the 4th of April on Paramount Plus.
2024.
Yes.
Yes. There you go.
Okay.
One for the diaries.
Finally, thank you, Kay. You should be more grateful because I didn't make you watch this. I think, you know, that was particularly...
excuse me. What? You could have watched Avoidance as well.
I could have watched Avoidance. Yeah. Yes, that's
true.
There's
a lot of things we could have done.
I could have watched half an hour of Avoidance instead of 4 hours of Star Trek Discovery, which would have saved me a lot of time, but I didn't.
Yeah, but we know you love it.
You know, because I'm committed, Kay. That's like professionalism. That's, you know.
All right, we'll take this off, Mike.
Finally, this week, we got The Town. This is a six-part mini-series from the pen of one Stephen Knight, who apparently never stops working. And this is an 80s-set series that takes him back to Peaky Blinders territory, or rather to his native Birmingham, for a show about an extended family whose fortunes encompassed the troubles in Northern Ireland, civil unrest in Brum, and an emerging music scene. Boydie, this is This Town, not Our Town, but crucially, was it Your Town?
And it's not This Country either, which a lot of people got it confused with. Not
he's
you necessarily, maybe Kay, possibly. it's a little bit like Sally Wainwright's and Renegade Nell. They have got very little in common.
Fewer genies and fairies.
Let me explain what I mean by that. That, as I talked about how years ago I saw her talking about her dream passion project was this, that story for her, Renegade Nell. I think this for Stephen Knight is his dream passion project that he's got made because of his huge success with Peaky Blinders, and to a similar extent, SAS Rogue Heroes, which was also a big success on BBC One last year. And I think he's now got the power to make this show that is completely his. You can tell it's his obsession. In fact, I did go to the launch of it where he was interviewed on stage and talked about how important all this stuff was. So it kind of covers a lot of his obsessions, particularly like as anyone who's ever watched Peaky Blinders will know, the music choices on that show are phenomenal, and famously they take a long time deciding which music, which songs. Why Kay's laughing at me? I don't know why. So music is key to this whole thing. So really, what this town is a story of the creation of a fictional ska new wave band at the beginning of the 80s, at the time of the Specials and Selector, and anyone who's around, as old as I am, will remember that time as a brilliant period for pop music. And the kind of suddenly there was like a multicultural world where you'd see, you know, diverse bands on Top of the Pops for the first time, really, for a long time, in a scene which was dominated, like the New Romantic scene, which happened at the same time, was very much dominated by middle class white boys, I think, maybe some working class people as well. But this is firmly rooted in the idea that from these working class communities came these bands. And so he creates a fictional band of like four or five friends who are all living in Birmingham or Coventry, around that area in the Midlands in the early 80s. And it seems like the mission he's set himself seems to be, this was also a period of social unrest. There were lots of, like, you know, riots, there were race riots, there were a lot of people who...
Protests,
you know, it was like Thatcher was prime minister. There were a lot of communities that felt they were kind of being left to rot, basically. And so you had a lot of kind of like leftist demonstrations, which, and the first scene of this whole series is a big, like, protest that turns violent, and one of this racist policeman kind of has a go at the main character,
Dante,
played brilliantly by Levi Brown. And so it kind of, that's the backdrop, and as it goes on, the band slowly forms, and it kind of starts out with this guy, Dante, who is like a complete dreamer and poet. He's literally a poet. That's how he describes himself. And he writes these poems. And this girl called Jeannie, played by Eve Austin, is a local activist at the college where they both go. And she makes music, she tells him. So she has the initial idea of, why don't we match your lyrics, your poetry / lyrics with my music? And he's kind of a bit reluctant. He's like, well, they're not lyrics, they're poems. But she kind of persuades him. And then his cousin joins in. And then this other girl that he's obsessed with, works in the record store, joins in, and slowly they form a band. And over the in the first episode, it barely even gets to the point where you think, oh, they're going to form a band, because it also fills in the kind of social world they're all living in. There's a whole gangster subplot, there's like an IRA supporting community, there's a his brother works for the British police in Ulster, so there's a real kind of like
there's a family conflict, isn't there?
There's family conflict built around the situation in Northern Ireland at the time and the troubles. So it's classic Stephen Knight, the politics of the time, music, great music, but I can't think of anything, but it's unique because there's nothing like it's on TV where about the formation of a band in this particular way. That's what makes it really special, I think. And it actually genuinely convinces, in terms of, this is probably how bands like that at the time got together, in a slightly ramshackle, almost borderline accidental way. I found it absolutely fascinating. I really enjoyed it. And the big star of the show, of course, is Michelle Dockery out of Downton. She doesn't even appear in the first episode, by the way, but she plays the mother of one of the characters called Barden, who is a working class singer and has alcohol issues, and she's almost unrecognisable from Michelle Dockery's character in Downton. She's totally like working class, and it's a real bold bit of casting, but she really pulls it off, and she's fantastic in it. I really liked it. I think it's a I'm going to use the B word, it's a bold choice for BBC One. This starts BBC One Easter Sunday / Bank Holiday Monday. It's not your normal, it's not a crime show, it's not a hospital or medical drama, it's not particularly any genre, and that's quite unusual to give such a big slot, and I'm glad they have. I hope people watch it, I hope it's a hit, but I'll be fascinated to see what people make of it, because it's really unusual, is my bottom line. What did you think, Kay?
They're making bold choices, though, recently, aren't they? Because they did with The Way. I don't know what... I can't remember what day
Yeah,
that.
Similar. Good point. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. I mean, no, 100%. And people... I mean, that got some mixed reviews, and didn't
Mainly
do that
mine.
Well ratings-wise, I have to say.
Oh, really?
Yeah, no, it didn't. Yeah, it was a shame.
I enjoyed this. I really liked it. I thought the young characters and their stories are all incredibly compelling, and the fact that they're all interwoven, as you say, Barden, who is Dante's cousin, is trying to free himself from his dad's criminal activities, and there's all that kind of the conflict in the family and the, you know, loyalties, where they lie, and Michelle Dockery's character we'll later see as the alcoholic mother. Yeah, I just found the stories compelling, and I really like the music, which, as you can imagine, is a key part of this. It was enjoyable.
James, what did you think?
I hate ska music.
Oh my God. Is that your review?
That's my review. No, it's not. Also, there's no real. There's not a lot of scar in the first episode. So it's the only one I've seen.
Not yet.
So I'm sure there'll be lots of it. I do have a very specific hatred for. Well, just baggy trousers of all ilks, really. But no, I'm not a scar. Not a scar fan.
Is that because you're a white ring? Right wing.
A white ring. I was going to say, is this a music term I'm not familiar with?
I thought it was something.
Is that because you're a right wing fascist?
No, yes, it's because I'm a fascist. No. I don't know. There's just something about Scar. Even the kind of that new Scar Sublime stuff that I never in the 90s. I never really enjoyed that either. But that
Let
will not
joy in.
Yeah, but that did not affect my enjoyment of this show, which is extremely well done. And it took me a long time to figure out that all the disparate plot threads were connected by a single family. I was like, I'm sorry, what? I couldn't initially work out how these threads, because the Troubles and Birmingham and all these things were tying together. But it is the music, obviously, that brings all these points together. But it has a very, very, which is, I think these things really require this. It has a very distinctive sense of time and place to it. And Stephen Knight, I think, has said that obviously, Peaky Blinders was personal to him to an extent, but I think he said this is a much more personal story to him, specifically the music and the places and the feel of it and the eras and just the things that he remembers from his childhood. And I think that kind of personal connection maybe shines through in the attention to detail and the clear kind of like emotional connection he has to this place. So yeah, it's really well put together, as one would expect from Stephen Knight, quite frankly. But yeah, it's good stuff. As I say in Birmingham.
It is. I'm glad you liked it.
Yeah.
What a relief.
Despite my antipathy towards ska music as a genre.
Weird anti-ska thing.
Yes. I am in many ways scarred by ska.
God. Dear.
Anyway, so that is this town, not our town.
No, not this country.
Not this country. It's Boydstown. Where does it air, Boydie, and when?
Well, it actually started Easter Sunday, which would just have gone by the time you listen to this, on Easter Monday. So it started Sunday, carries on today, Monday, and then will be on Sundays for the rest of the series, I think. That's how it goes. 2024.
Yeah, good. Yeah. You knew I was going to pick you up on that.
What else is out this week?
Oh, there's quite a lot out this week. There's something called, there's Ripley for a start, right? Which was heavily embargoed.
Will we do that on Plus?
Yes.
We will do that on Plus. That's out on Thursday, the 4th of April, 2024, on the Netflix. And that is the new version. Well, it was kind of the same story as The Talented Mr. Ripley, based on the Patricia Highsmith books, played by Andrew Scott, plays Ripley, the character played by Matt Damon in the film, The Talented Mr. Ripley. It's entirely shot in black and white, and we cannot say what we think of it yet, but I've watched it. And we'll talk about that on Pilot Plus. There is The Parrot. There's this thing called on Netflix. Also, it's a busy week for Netflix. Friday, the 5th of April, 2024. There's Parasite with a Y.
Mm.
The Grey. Parasite : The Grey, which is a Korean show from the guy who made the absolutely brilliant film Train to Busan. If you've seen Train to Busan, Yong Sang-ho, he has created and directed the show, and it's about parasitic life forms infiltrating Korea. And it feels a little bit like The Last of Us, the description. I don't know.
It has a hint of that.
But I have got it. They've sent it to me to watch, so I'm fascinated by that. That looks quite good. Loot. Series 2, do you remember Loot? I think we reviewed series 1. It's the one with Maya Rudolph as the recently divorced a woman from tech billionaire John, played by Adam Scott. And it was all about her having to deal with the aftermath of being really, really rich and then kind of having that money removed from her, I think, due to... Do you remember that one, vaguely?
No.
Oh, okay, fine. Well, anyway, that's back. Loot, which is one of the less memorable... To be fair, Apple TV Plus shows is a half-hour kind of comedy. That's back on Wednesday, 3rd of April, that James is clearly massively looking forward to.
Oh, yeah, I'm really excited about that show that I have no memory of.
That's absolutely brilliant.
What have we not discussed? Alex Rider, did you mention that?
Alex Rider, no, thank you.
Series 3, it's moved to Freevee.
Freevee.
Yeah, it's Amazon on Freevee, Freevee now. That's on Friday.
Yeah, correct.
I think that might be it, you know.
Oh, Traces. They're on Saturdays on BBC One. Do you remember Traces, which was on Alibi and starred Molly Windsor and Laura Fraser and Martin Compston? Do you remember
With the burning, with the toaster fire.
Yeah, toaster
the
fire.
The one with the toaster fire, yes.
That's randomly arrived on BBC One on Saturday nights.
Okay.
At 9:25 in the casualty slot. So, I mean, that's a bit weird. But I think that is about it, pretty much.
Okay. And what does that make our pick of the week?
Well, so... Obviously, I love Ramesh, but it's season 2, so I'm going to go for Sugar.
I'm torn between, yeah, they're all, I like them all. Maybe I'll go Sugar as well. Yeah, I like Sugar. Yeah.
Sweet.
It is. It's very good. It is Sugar for me as well.
Wow. Rare.
Is that a rare? So I don't think that qualifies for what Kay is about to do, which is saying that as per the most recent Pilot Plus, someone suggested that we have a special badge, a Tri-Solaran badge for when all three of us love a show. Mm. But I don't
It's called We Love It. We liked it a pie lot.
Yes, there we
when
go.
When it's all three of us.
A pile on or something. That'd be if we don't like it. If all three of us don't like it, it's a pile on.
Yeah.
Yeah. That there we go. Well. It's good.
The good, only time good. When three sugars is acceptable. Three likes. We've got three likes, right?
It's very true.
You're kind of belting out the sugar jokes and puns this week. I think that's why you like it so much.
It's because I had a lot of sugar before I came on, for real.
That seems good. Okay, right. Well, that was this week. That's it for this week's podcast. If you enjoyed it, as we've said before, please do head over to Apple Podcasts or indeed Spotify and leave us a 5 Helen O'Hara rating. if you'd like to follow us on the social medias, you can do that too at Pilot TV Pod, at Helen O'Hara, at Helen L. O'Hara, as Boyd would, of course, at Boyd Hilton, at Kay Rivera, at James C. Dyer. Please subscribe to Pilot Plus. We'd really appreciate it.
Come and join us for more.
How do you not? How could you not want more of this in your ears every single week? Also, did I mention you get it ad-free as well? The whole podcast, this one, no more ads. And you get it at 5 a.m. instead of 5 p.m. So you get it 12 hours early. Oh, honestly.
Listen, this is unplanned, but I just want to read this thing I read. Someone left us a review, and it's from Hale76, who says, they've been listening to the main podcast for quite some time, but they're a recent subscriber to the Pilot TV Plus pod, and has to say they're so glad that they have. Love the pod. I won't go into all the nice stuff because it's embarrassing. But also says, PS, I take all my TV choices from the three of you, and you make me appear very knowledgeable to my husband, as he says, oh, I've never heard of that. And I'll be like, yeah, I just read about it, or that director also did this. Blah, blah, blah. So thank you.
There you go. That is a review that Kay in no way just made up. So you can.
No, it's there. Check it out. When you leave us another 5-star review.
Absolutely. And remember, we draw ever closer to Cake Gate. Mm-hmm. Are we close to Cake Gate? How close are we to cake, Kay?
We are. Well, we're getting exceptionally close. Right. I said I would buy you a Pat Val cake.
Yes. A whole cake, not a slice.
Yeah, not like when James bought us a slice, one slice between three.
That's not true. I bought three slices.
I said when we received 2,000 reviews on Chartable.
Uh-huh.
And we're currently on, drum roll, 1,826.
Okay. So not close, but closer.
Yeah, we're quite close.
Okay,
yeah,
okay. It's good.
Tensions are rising.
Tensions are rising. It's getting very exciting. On next week's show, when we come to you after Easter, we'll be talking about The Regime on Sky. Very exciting with Kate Winslet. I'm going to guess we might end up doing something like Baby Reindeer on Netflix. Fallout comes to Prime Video on
Franklin,
the 11th.
Franklin
is on Apple, yes.
With your Douglas, Michael Douglas.
So it seems likely that we will be doing those.
Don't forget The Cuckoo, Channel 5 drama.
Oh.
And how could we?
Listen, I've watched it already.
Yeah, Kay's already. I mean, she's going to be mooting that for review, just warning you now.
The Love Cuckoo on Channel 5. Exciting times.
Spoiler, it is Cuckoo Bong.
Oh, God, I bet it is. That's it for this week's podcast. It is, of course, Easter Monday, so feel free to eat your own body weight in chocolate. You know, it's the only way that you can find something as sweet as Boyd's very own Helen O'Hara. Pilot out.